Dunbash. I'm Sarah Glynn for Media News, and this is my weekly news review for Saturday, the 15th of July. Erdogan puts the world on probation. For Turkey's President Erdogan, Sweden's desperation to join NATO is a gift that keeps on giving. Like every other NATO member, Turkey can veto Sweden's application, and the bargaining power this has given him is not something Erdogan intends to give up until he has to. Every moment that he keeps Sweden waiting provides the opportunity for him to squeeze further concessions from the Swedish government and from other countries that are also desperate to see Sweden's accession, notably the United States. On Monday, the eve of the NATO summit in Vilnius, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg tweeted a photograph of himself in a triple handshake with Erdogan and the Swedish Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson, announcing that President Erdogan has agreed to forward Sweden's accession protocol to the Grand National Assembly as soon as possible and ensure ratification. Excited breaking news stories were quickly followed by speculation as to what it was that had clinched the deal and by discussions of Turkey's swing towards the West. But Sweden's politicians and media soon learnt that they had celebrated too soon. On Tuesday, the Swedish Solidarity Committee for Rojava pointed out that Turkey has not said yes, Erdogan has. Now he has to get it through Parliament, and that parliamentary approval couldn't be taken for granted. The pro-government Sabah newspaper reported that, quote, Erdogan evaluated the meeting with Stoltenberg and Kristersson with the words, the match continues, the score is still 0-0, we need to see the coming minutes. End quote. After the closure of the summit on Wednesday, Erdogan told reporters that due to the summer recess, the Turkish parliament would not even consider the case until October, and he's made it clear that up until that time, Sweden will be on probation. The NATO press statement put out after Monday's meeting especially focused on terrorism and Swedish cooperation with Turkey's legitimate security concerns. In the world view of the Turkish government, the biggest terrorist threat is the PKK, under which heading they include all groups sympathetic to the ideas of Abdullah Öcalan. They have persuaded many countries to list the PKK as a terrorist organisation, though the arguments for doing this are clearly political rather than based on any legal logic. Now they want to persuade these other countries to follow them in treating all these groups as terrorists. The NATO statement makes clear that, quote, Sweden reiterates that it will not provide support to the YPG-PYD, end quote. That is to the Kurdish organisations that can be thanked for protecting the world from ISIS and that continue to battle against ISIS resurgence with help from the United States. Although NATO members understand ISIS as a terrorist organisation that has carried out major attacks in Western countries, they are prepared to penalise the YPG and PYD in order to appease Turkey. America felt obliged to confirm in the wake of Monday's meeting that they still regard the Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, which includes the YPG, as a critical counter-terrorism partner. However, they have always made clear that their relationship only concerns the defeat of ISIS. Sweden has promised to, quote, present a roadmap as the basis of its continued fight against terrorism in all its forms and manifestations towards the full implementation of all elements of the trilateral memorandum agreed at the previous NATO summit. End quote. And Sweden and Turkey have agreed to long-term counter-terrorism cooperation. NATO has also promised that they will significantly step up counter-terrorism work. As we saw after the last NATO summit, with Turkey holding the crucial veto card, what is written in the agreement is of less importance than Turkey's interpretation of it. NATO can also be sure that Turkish pressure will not end with Sweden's admittance into NATO. It can be applied whenever the bloc needs to agree on mutual action, and the promised special coordinator for counter-terrorism will find themselves pushed to accept Turkey's definition of who qualifies as a terrorist. It is not only Sweden whose actions will be monitored by Turkey. Erdogan has been using the leverage of the veto to try and force concessions from others too. Although Turkey insists publicly that discussions over whether Turkey can buy F-16 fighter jets from the United States are unconnected to lifting the veto on Sweden, this has always been regarded as an important part of the NATO negotiations, not least by President Biden. Resistance has come from the US Congress, and especially from Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Menendez, who is concerned about Turkey's threat to Greece. Relations between Greece and Turkey have calmed down somewhat, and Menendez had given indications that he would allow the sale. However, he has also said that he wants to be sure that the improvement in relations is lasting. Biden and Erdogan met on the fringes of the NATO conference for over an hour on Tuesday, and their statements afterwards exhibited a new warmth. US journalist Seymour Hirst gives a further reason for that warmth, claiming that behind the scenes, quote, Biden promised a much needed $11 to $13 billion line of credit would be extended to Turkey by the International Monetary Fund, end quote. Ragip Soylu for Middle East Eye attributes Erdogan's apparent softening over Sweden to the F-16 deal and also to Canada lifting their ban on arms exports to Turkey. Sweden and Finland have both ended similar bans, and one of the issues that Turkey insisted on including in the agreement was that member states should not be allowed to sanction each other. Ending the Canadian ban will give Turkey access to Canadian drone optics, which they've used before with lethal consequences. Both drone optics and F-16s can be used by Turkey in their fight against the Kurds. In the run-up to the summit, Erdogan surprised everyone by introducing European Union membership into the equation and suggesting that Swedish membership of NATO could be bought by Turkish membership of the EU. The EU has been discussing removing Turkey from the category of candidate country on the grounds that they have only been moving further away from complying with the fundamental Copenhagen criteria on democracy and the rule of law, and it is clear that EU membership is not on the table. Turkish membership has been made even more improbable by the increase in the anti-Muslim right within Europe and by Turkey's agreement with the EU to keep migrants out of the Union. However, there's been talk of preferential trade agreements, especially important for Turkey's troubled economy, and easier visas, and Erdogan could benefit from these without having to address Turkey's democratic deficit. While there was still a chance that Turkey might become a member of the EU, there was a hope that this would encourage them to become more democratic. If membership discussions are formally ended, but the EU is still ready to agree beneficial economic arrangements, then they lose the possibility to pressure Turkey over rights abuses. Sweden has agreed to, quote, actively support efforts to reinvigorate Turkey's EU accession process, including modernization of the EU-Turkey customs union and visa liberalization, end quote. And the EU Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, has discussed with Erdogan, quote, scope for strengthening the EU-Turkey relationship, end quote. Erdogan's wooing of NATO even extended to supporting NATO membership for Ukraine and returning five Russian-captured Azov battalion commanders to Kyiv in defiance of a prisoner exchange agreement with Russia. But this should not be taken to imply genuine support, just a continuation of the same calculated politics, exploiting different powers in the pursuit of Turkish dominance. Russia understands this, though they are not happy about the support for Ukraine, and the return of the Azov prisoners damages Turkey's credibility. They had no illusions in Turkey's friendship, and now it is their turn to be reminded that every bit of Turkish support is transactional and has to be earned. In the eyes of the PKK, Turkey is forcing NATO to back a genocidal policy against the Kurds. Duran Kalkan of the PKK's Executive Council told Media Haber that the Turkish government wants to, quote, make everyone accept the genocide of the Kurds, carry out attacks to destroy Kurdishness, saying that it is attacking terrorism, end quote. He claims that, Quote, in Turkey's plan, NATO will give Ankara political and military support. In other words, NATO will support the genocide of the Kurds. End quote. From NATO's perspective, this support is largely a byproduct of their politically calculated need to keep Turkey on side, in the same way that the omission of Kurdish rights from the Treaty of Lausanne 100 years ago was the product of wider geopolitical calculations. However, the Kurdish freedom movement's criticism of capitalism and the nation state also makes them a target in their own right. Turkey's harnessing of international support in their battle against the Kurds is not new. It is now over 24 years since the Kurdish leader Abdullah Öcalan was captured by a CIA-led international conspiracy and handed over to the Turkish state. His initial death sentence was commuted to life imprisonment when Turkey abolished capital punishment, but his conditions have been so restricted as to constitute almost a living death. His isolation in Imrali Island prison has been increased so that he has had no contact with the outside world since March 2021. However, some pieces of information do manage to get out. Last Saturday, Sabri Ok, a member of the executive of the Kurdistan Communities Union, the KCK, the umbrella organisation that includes the PKK, announced on Sturk TV, quote, we know that anonymous letters were given to Reba Apo, Abdullah Öcalan, by the occupying Turkish state and the Imrali administration. Those letters said to Reba Apo that he will be given such a poison that it would kill him. The letters said that he would die day by day without realizing it. End quote. The impact of such threats is enhanced by fears that Öcalan may have been subjected to progressive poisoning in 2007. Then, hair samples smuggled out of the prison showed high levels of strontium and chromium, but the sample was very small and subsequent tests organised by the Council of Europe's Committee for the Prevention of Torture did not find anything that would cause concern. As Ok pointed out, the threatening letters, quote, play with Öcalan's psychology, his mental health, his physical health, end quote. The Kurdistan National Congress in Brussels has called on the Council of Europe, the European Union and the United Nations to organise an urgent ad hoc mission to visit Öcalan, or at least to put pressure on Turkey to allow an immediate visit by his lawyers or family. And at the first hearing of the case against 18 Kurdish journalists, the 15 defendants who had been remanded in custody for 13 weeks were released. However, the journalist's trial still goes on, and although we celebrate those occasions when the Turkish courts do not simply act as government tools, they can also be used to give a false impression of a functioning legal system. At the same time, a 14-year-old child has been given a 5-month prison sentence for insulting the president in a WhatsApp group, though he will not actually be sent to prison. And an Islamist militant who had previously been convicted of establishing and leading an armed terrorist organisation was released from prison. It is claimed that his release was a response to pressure from Huda Par, which had 4 MPs elected on the ruling Justice and Development Party, AKP, list. The death of Abdulbaki Erol and the 250,000 people who attended his funeral, for which Turkish Airlines put on extra flights, has drawn attention to the large and growing role of religious cults in Erdogan's Turkey. Initially, this role was taken by the Gulen movement, but when Erdogan turned against his former allies, other organisations filled their place. Erol's Mezil community is the largest of these. They have major commercial interests, are believed to be strong within Turkey's bureaucracy, and support right-wing politics, including Erdogan and his AKP government. Meanwhile, in Gyulemeğ province, close to the Iraqi border, troop build-ups and a letter to the village guards, local paramilitaries, have fueled expectations of an intensified Turkish attack into the Kurdistan region of Iraq, where they've been extending their military foothold and attacking the PKK. Turkey's incursions into Iraq are supported by the Kurdistan Democratic Party, the KDP, but resented by the rival Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. Just one of the differences between two parties who fought a civil war in the 1990s and whose antagonism is bringing the region's politics to a standstill. The Kurdistan region of Iraq also provides a refuge for Kurdish parties from Iran. These are armed but have not intervened militarily in the uprising in Iran for fear of provoking an even more violent reaction than we've already seen. This hasn't stopped Iran from attacking them, and now Iran is threatening to attack again if they've not been disarmed by September. While Iran is holding off from committing another military assault, individual members of the Democratic Party of Iranian Kurdistan, the PDKI, living in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, are being assassinated. On Wednesday, Hengor Organization for Human Rights reported that the body of Siaman Shaboy was found near Hula with bullets in his back after years of threats from the Iranian security agencies. And early on Friday, the 7th of July, Lukman Aji and Adel Mohajer were killed in Kaladze in Sulaymaniyah province, and a third man was injured. The suspect in that double killing is a former member of the party who had then joined the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and who escaped to Iran after the murders. These men join a long list of murdered Kurdish activists, which includes Abdul Rahman Gasemlu, a former leader of the PDKI, the anniversary of whose murder in Vienna 34 years ago was marked on Thursday. In Iran itself, Hengor records a steady stream of detentions and arrests, and also the death in custody of two young men who are believed to have lost their lives under torture. Musa Esmaili was detained on the 7th of May. Last Sunday, his family was told to collect his body from the security facility. When they got there, the authorities refused to release his body and threatened not to hold the funeral ceremony at a mosque, and the family was warned that media coverage would have catastrophic consequences. They were never told what he'd been accused of. Payman Gulwani, who died in custody on Monday, 2 weeks after his arrest, is believed to have been another member of the PDKI. Despite assertions from the authorities that he died from a fall or from a severe illness, Hengor's shared pictures of his body showing severe bruising consistent with torture. His funeral in Mahabad became a mass protest, complete with the Kurdish resistance song Ey Rakib. Even beyond Turkey's military strikes, the people of North and East Syria continue to suffer from Turkish aggression. The situation has not improved in Hasaka, where the shutting down of the Alok pumping station by its Turkish occupiers has left over 1 million people without adequate or safe water. The Autonomous Administration is calling on the United Nations to get involved, but the UN Special Rapporteur cancelled his planned visit when the Syrian government in Damascus did not allow access. The Syrian government does not want the Autonomous Administration to survive and has shown itself happy for North and East Syria to be put under intolerable pressures. 5 more Syrian prisoners have been taken illegally to Turkey, where they can be expected to disappear into the prison system out of contact with their families. This is a problem that has raised international concern in the past, but never been addressed. In the last 3 months, a further 256 families have fled the trauma of life in Turkish-occupied Girespi, while Turkey has forcibly deported Syrian refugees to the occupied areas and to Idlib, completing the other half of their planned demographic changes in the region. North Press reports 200 Syrian refugees taken across the border on Monday, 47 Syrians brought to Serekaniye on Wednesday, and 22 taken to Idlib on Thursday. Turkey also facilitates continued activity by ISIS, both through direct support and by generating the social stresses on which ISIS thrives. A half-year report by North Press shows that ISIS is still strong. In the first 6 months of this year, 262 people were killed in direct ISIS attacks in Syria. Of these, 141 were civilians, 64 were members of President Assad's Syrian army, 37 were members of the Autonomous Administration's SDF, and 20 were members of Iranian-backed factions. A further 101 people were killed by mines and other remnants of war left by ISIS, and 165 people were kidnapped, of whom 20 are confirmed dead. In the same period, operations against ISIS resulted in the arrest of over 1,000 ISIS suspects and the death of dozens of ISIS fighters. With the need for defence remaining so strong, the claim made in the Russian media that the United States was sending SDF fighters to support Ukraine appears especially absurd. But it provided a neat way of slandering the SDF and making them seem like America's mercenaries rather than people of Syria defending their homeland. The SDF felt forced to issue a statement making clear that they are not concerned with issues outside Syria. The problem is not SDF involvement elsewhere, but external forces meddling in Syria. This week has provided another lesson in the corrosive impact of nation-state politics.